Unpolished Little Gems, Episode 3, Illusion. First up, Natasha's call to the NHS Direct hotline takes an unexpected turn. Baby Powder was written and produced by Tasman Pinder and performed by Emma Davies as Natasha and Francesca Anderson as Kelly.
Hello, NHS Direct.
You've got to help me, please. I don't know what to do.
Okay, just slow down. Take a deep breath. Right, there we go. Now, what's your name?
Natasha.
That's good, Natasha. You're doing great. I want you to slowly tell me the reason for your call today. Is it yourself you're calling about?
No.
Who are you calling for?
It's my baby, Lily, my baby girl.
I see. And are you with Lily now?
Of course I am. She's 6 months old, for God's sake. I'm hardly going to... Oh, sorry.
That's completely fine. I can hear you're upset.
Yeah.
Right. Can you tell me what's the matter with your baby?
That's why I'm calling you.
Right. No. What I mean is her symptoms.
I'm really worried because we went to the park today.
Mm-hmm.
Not the usual one down the road we normally go to.
Uh-huh.
I know you're this group of lads hanging out there with their bikes lately. Dodgy looking type, smoking weed, drinking that case cider. You know the stuff, it's what, like 17% proof or something mad?
I'm sorry, but what's all this got to do with your baby's condition?
Hold your horses, I'm getting to that. Jesus!
All right.
Where was I? So I'm pushing Lily's pram, just minding my own business. And what do you think happens?
They attacked you.
Who?
The gang of boys.
No.
Oh, well, good.
Anyways, we're strolling along, enjoying the sunshine, heading to the park next to the graveyard, because that's the Costa next to it, and I want to stop off for a skinny cappuccino.
Okay.
And then it only goes and starts raining, doesn't it?
Oh, that's a shame. So you turned back?
I've been stuck in my flat all bleeding day. Of course I didn't. I figured a little rain was no problem, wanted to get some air, so I pulls up Lily's blanket right round her, all snug and warm-like, and I figures the roof of the pram's going to keep her dry. Only you'll never guess what goes and happens.
It didn't.
Bingo! When I goes to check on her, she's soaked through!
Oh no, the pram's leaked.
Madness, eh? Got the bloody thing off free cycle, should have guessed. I suppose it seemed too good to be true at the time.
So you're worried because your baby's been exposed to the elements?
Yes, doctor.
Right, and do you think she might have a cold or fever or bronchitis or pneumonia or...
Bloody hell, doctor, I thought you were supposed to be giving advice and reassurance, need to work on your bedside manner.
I'm not actually a doctor, I just work on the phone lines.
Not a doctor? What the hell's the point of the service then?
We are all fully trained professionals.
Blooming waste of time if you ask me. Is this a premium rate line?
I'm sorry?
Is it premium rate? Because I don't want to end up with a whopping great phone bill. Oh my days, that's literally the last thing I need right now.
I'm afraid I really don't know.
Can you ask your supervisor?
Natasha, now let's get back to your baby, okay?
Yeah, so she's not been herself ever since we went out in the rain.
In what sense?
You what?
I'm going to ask you a series of questions so we can check how Lily's doing, okay? Do you understand?
Yeah.
Good. Now, does your baby have a fever?
No.
Right, no temperature. Forehead's not hot to the touch?
No.
Right, well, that's a really good sign that she's healthy, okay? Right, just a few more questions. Has your baby developed a cough or cold?
She's quiet as a mouse.
Right, excellent. Okay, and has your baby been breathing normally? There's no wheezing or coughing?
I don't.
Sorry, Natasha, I didn't quite catch that.
No, she's not breathing.
She's not breathing? Are you sure?
My baby's not breathing.
Right, now just listen to me. I need you to stay calm.
This girl's not breathing and you're telling me to stay calm?
Natasha, I'm going to send someone straight out to you, but right now I need you to listen to me, okay?
Okay, yeah.
Right, that's good. And I need you to do exactly as I say. Do you understand?
Yeah, stop talking to me like I'm a bloody idiot. Of course I understand. I'm sorry, doctor.
It's fine, really. Right. Now I need you to place your mouth completely over Lily's mouth and nose and breathe out as she inhales your breath.
Mouth to mouth sort of thing.
Yes, exactly. Natasha, I need you to keep doing that until someone reaches you. Okay, there is an ambulance on the way.
So much powder.
Sorry, what was that?
Flipping covered in it. Oh, and would you look at that all over the kitchen carpet?
I don't quite understand what's happening. Are you saying Lily's got some kind of powder on her?
Of course not, silly.
Then, sorry, what exactly are you saying, Natasha?
Well, Lily is powder.
I'm still not quite...
Flower. Well, that's why I called her Lily, Obs. She's my little flower baby. Doctor? She will be all right, won't she?
She'll be fine. You just need to leave her somewhere warm to dry out.
Oh, I can't thank you enough, Doctor.
You take care, Natasha. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
In 1960s, the East End of London, Jane has a quiet life with her boyfriend, Charlie. But what she is craving is something new, different, unknown. Wishing stars Jessica Fowler as Jane and was written and produced by Tracy Haywood.
I've not really had the chance to talk about this with anyone, but I wanted to have a bit of a moan. So I hope you don't mind. Although, it doesn't really matter if you do or you don't, does it? So, I'm going to have a bit of a moan anyway. So it started about 9 months ago. I'd been asking Charlie to take me up the West End so I could get all dressed up for the first time in months. But he could never be bothered. "We got the Crown just round the corner," he used to say. "It's a 5-minute walk away. We know the barman by name. We know we like the music. And we can always get a table. What's so wrong with that?" Well, there's nothing wrong with it. But sometimes you don't always want to go somewhere where the barman knows your name. And you know you always like the music. Sometimes you want something fresh and new. Exciting. Anyway, I eventually convinced Polly from work to go out with me on Friday night. I told Charlie we were going to the pictures. I bought this new dress especially for it and did it at Polly's. It was black and fitted tightly and had a hem which stopped just above my knee. It made me feel like Marilyn Monroe. And let's be honest, who doesn't want to feel like Marilyn Monroe? Eh, ladies? So we arrived at 9 p.m. at this bar in Mayfair, the Berrington, and me and Polly ordered our drinks. As we were properly out, we decided to order martinis in those lovely long-stemmed glasses. We were chatting at the bar, and I suddenly noticed my reflection in the mirror at the end of the room. I looked like a completely different person. Glamorous, sexy, sophisticated. I hadn't seen me like this for some time. I imagined what I must look like to a stranger, like this, well, this sexy woman, like the sexy woman character in a film. The thought of it was so thrilling to me. I felt like I'd had 5 cocktails, not just one, I can tell you. And just as I was imagining what it would be like to have a stranger's eyes on me. Then all of a sudden it was happening for real. There was a man at the other end of the bar staring at me. No, he was doing more than staring. He was taking me in. He was looking at every inch of my body, and I could feel his eyes on me like an X-ray. As his eyes moved over my body, he noticed that I'd caught him looking, and I expected him to look away embarrassed. But he didn't. He held my gaze with absolute confidence and just gave me this look. Oh, I hadn't seen that look in a while. There's something primal about it. It's a need. A need to touch your body. That's what the look was. It was pure. You know that look. It's not complicated by anything else. I was expecting him to walk straight over, but he didn't. He stayed where he was talking to his friend, and every so often he would look over at me. Just look. I was pretending to be having fun with Polly, but I just couldn't stop thinking about him. There was this anticipation. And now I'm explaining all this to you. Now I'm realising I hadn't felt that in a long time. The combination of the urge and not knowing if you'll get to fulfil that urge. It just goes up and up until you're bubbling over. And at about midnight, just when I started to think he would have come by now if he was coming. And then he did. He walked right over to me. He took his time over it too. That look in his eyes as he walked over to me. And my heart was pounding so hard I could hear it over the music. And it was screaming, "This is it! This is it!" And it was. And he didn't say a word. He just slipped this bit of paper over to me, folded over. And then he did it again. He looked at me. And he took me in. Then he walked away, slowly again. My hands were shaking as I unfolded the piece of paper. And it said, "The Mayfair. From 365. Knock twice." I know what you're thinking right now, but I don't want you judging me. That feeling it gave me. I felt chosen. I felt seen. I felt wanted. Can you really blame me for choosing to follow that? I mean, that's what we're meant to look for in a man, isn't it? Someone who makes your heart flutter, and your stomach churn, and your skin prick with tiny beads of sweat. All I know was that this feeling was too powerful to ignore. And so I made my excuses to Polly. And I left. I followed my heart, literally into the Mayfair, up the stairs to room 365. And with my hands shaking, I knocked on the door. And he opened it. He said nothing again. He had an ice bucket and a bottle of champagne. He took the bottle and poured me a glass, and he handed it to me. And I imagine what we must have looked like. Me in my black dress. Him in his suit. Us in that grand hotel room with our champagne. And it looked like something out of a film. Suddenly, I wasn't the woman sat at home in her dressing gown watching the films. I was the woman in the film. I was something special. We'd arranged to meet the following week. And the week after that. And the week after that, until it had been a few months and my life was becoming this sharper and sharper contrast, like I'd been down a coal pit, but now I was basking in beautiful sunlight. I couldn't go on like that anymore. It wasn't fair on Charlie, and it wasn't fair on me. I told him we'd grown apart. I'd changed and he hadn't, or he'd changed and I hadn't, but something had changed and things just weren't the same anymore. I needed excitement in my life, and I wasn't content with sitting down the crown anymore, watching Charlie play darts. And so, I moved out of Charlie's and into my new fella's place. And it was absolutely the right decision. I'm so happy, honestly I am. Only, things had changed a bit since I've moved in. We don't really get to go out as much now. He's so busy with his work. And when I ask why he can't come home any earlier than 9 p.m, he says, "For fuck's sake, we can't all be swanning around as secretary. Some of us have to earn proper money." Sometimes we go out with his friends, and I'll be telling them a funny story, and he'll interrupt me, and he'll say, "What are you dropping your H's for? We're not in Oliver Twist." But that's just how I talk. The sex has changed too. Back in the hotel room, he used to look at me in the eyes, and I'd feel like the most beautiful woman on earth. But now, he seems to only like it if I'm turned around facing the bed. Once we were doing it, and it must have gone in at a funny angle or something. I don't know, but the pain down there was like a bolt of lightning, and I cried out in pain, like an alarm, and I expected him to stop, but he didn't. He just kept going. But he must have heard me, though. How could he not? But I thought, if he heard the scream, and he knows I'm in pain, but he hasn't stopped to check if I'm all right, then he must have known I was in pain, and he didn't stop. A scream means pain, and pain means stop, and he heard me scream, and he knew I was in pain, and that pain means stop, and he didn't stop. So does that mean he's a... does that mean he's doing that to me? He was still thrusting inside me, and I was still in so much pain. And I suddenly thought to myself, if women can bear the pain of childbirth, then I can bear this pain. After all, it's much smaller than a baby, isn't it? And I did bear it. And when it was over, I lay there and thought about what just happened. And I couldn't understand how the man who slipped me his number in the bar was also the man who did that. The man who made me feel that way couldn't be the same man who made me feel this way. And if he could, then it's almost like the man in the bar didn't exist. And I couldn't have that, so I just bore it. The thing about Charlie is, he might have been boring, and he might have been stuck in a routine, and he might eat the same cheese and salad cream sandwiches every day. But he was always nice to me, kind, gentle. I sometimes look back at the past now, with those Friday nights in the Crown, with Charlie, and think they were pretty perfect, actually. He's moved on now. He's got a new girlfriend. And so, I'm going to stop moaning and appreciate what I've got. It's lovely. Like in the films it is.